You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, hey, welcome to The Crossover with me, Joe R. Lucas, brought to you by the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Throughout this season, this is where I'll bring you exclusive interviews with your favorite coaches, players, and legends. Each episode, I'll be getting down and dirty with some very special guests as I try to find out what life is like on and off the court for Europe's elite. Make sure to stay tuned in because no subject is out of bounds. What's up, my listeners? Welcome back to The Crossover. Once again, I'm Joe R. Lucas, your humble host. And in this edition, I'm sitting down in front of one of the best scorers that Europe has ever seen. A player that no matter where he goes, the one thing he knows is how to score. And if you haven't figured it out yet, let me give you a hint. I'm sitting here with the two-time Alfonso Ford EuroLeague top scorer, 2014 and 2017. And now the Panathinaikos shooting guard. You ain't got it yet? It's Mr. Keith Langford. What's going on, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be sitting across from you.
That's good, man. That's good. I call you Mr. because you're almost getting as old as me these days.
Right. The other day I saw a gray hair in my beard. So uh-oh. I was like, man, I'm getting up there. So
you got to get those out of there quick.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
You know what they say, though? You pull one out and it's like five more grows. So be careful, man.
Yeah, it's hard to resist. But you're right. I've heard that.
I didn't mean to say you're getting up. I'm a long ways away from you. Don't worry about it. But you call me sir downstairs. So I had to get back at you a little bit.
I got you.
All right, so let's jump right into it. If I open up the dictionary, it's a journeyman. There ain't no doubt that I'm going to see your picture in there, right? Counted up 14 different teams since 2005.
Right.
You probably lost count by now.
No. I know. I'm pretty sure I could list them all off. But, I mean, it comes with the territory. You know, I think, sometimes, you can look at that as a negative thing, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, I always try to keep a positive spin on it, and I look at it as that those are all teams that wanted me to be a part of the organization.
Right.
So for me, it's been an incredible ride, and you
performed everywhere you've been.
Right.
It wasn't
defrauded
anybody.
Exactly. So some places kind of outperformed the situation. Some places, didn't quite get expectations, but it's been an incredible ride, man.
Did you find it difficult to? I mean, it doesn't look like it by your numbers, but did you find it difficult to adapt? I'll get into like cultures and societies, all that later, but adapt to a coach and a different team every year, or not every year, but a lot of the times that you had to go to other teams.
Right. Well, see, that's the toughest part about it, because I think that a lot of the players you see that are very successful in Europe, they have continuity.
They have
multiple years with the same organization.
I believe in that.
Exactly. Totally. So, but one thing that, when you're a scorer, and guys want scoring. I say guys, but teams, organizations, mm-hmm. coaches, they want scoring. They want your skill set, and that's the one thing that you have to stay true to. So that's kind of what I've always tried to do, no matter where I've been.
I also, through my research, I saw your brother's not far behind you as far as a journeyman and traveling around.
Yeah.
I think he's actually been to more countries than you.
I was going to say his journey's been a little bit more interesting.
I've seen Argentina. I've seen him all over the place.
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah, Kevin. Actually, Kevin's in Finland right now. I just talked to him the other day. He's playing pretty well. But I don't know. Maybe I'll get to Latin America in a few years, but I like Europe right now, so I'm okay.
It's interesting, man. When I saw that you had a brother that played, I said, well, let me look him up real quick. And I didn't expect, 11 more teams. I'm like, damn, y'all are just.
the thing that's not fair about that is that he's 6'8", and I'm only 6'3", right. I'm only 6'3", so I got gypped, man, in the height category.
Oh, maybe he got gypped. I don't know.
Maybe he got gypped.
You got a story, so let's get going, man. Fort Worth, Texas, right?
Right on.
Cowboys fan?
Absolutely.
Was it just basketball through your childhood, or was it football, right?
No, it wasn't. It was, Texas, as you know, is a football state.
Right.
And
Friday Night Lights, baby.
Yeah, exactly, man. For me, I was going to be a running back. And,
So at 6'8", you wouldn't want to be a running
back. No, exactly, right? So I was going to be a running back and ended up breaking my foot as a high school freshman.
Okay.
And, football started to get a little too rough, a little too tough. And when basketball tryouts came, all of my friends were going, and I jumped in line right behind them. Really had never really played organized, outside of just playing outside.
And this was in high school?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't play until high school?
No. I'm sorry. Junior high. So, but ninth grade is when I stopped playing football.
Okay.
So it's
and you went to North Crowley High School, which is which I read it was a 10th, 11th, and 12th grade only.
Right, right.
So, but there was a time where they opened up and y'all went over there.
So the way it works, there was a high school, there was Crowley High School.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of got overpopulated, and so they opened up a second high school.
And that was only for sophomore to senior year?
Well, no, they had a ninth grade campus as well.
Okay.
So there's a ninth grade campus and then the 10th through 12th. So once they gave everybody the option if they wanted to transfer. And for me, you know, the high school I was at was really good. They had won the state championship the year before, and I wanted to play. So
right.
I was going to a new high school, and no matter how bad we sucked, you know, I was going to, you know,
It didn't work out that way, though. Y'all
no, it
did pretty well.
It didn't. I think I surprised a lot of people, surprised myself, to be honest. So.
That's good. And you had another younger brother of two.
Exactly.
So you got Kevin that we already talked about,
right.
And Justin.
And then Justin, yes.
And Justin is from another father, right?
Exactly.
So, but y'all lived together.
We all grew up together. And Justin started out high school in Houston, ended up finishing at North Crowley.
Okay.
Got a scholarship to Lamar.
Because something happened with the hurricane, right? Didn't the hurricane
come? Right. Exactly. Hurricane came, and you know, his thing, and he kind of always wanted to kind of go back,
right.
You know, to where we lived anyway. So it, you know, it's a terrible reason, but you know, it kind of gave him the yeah. chance to pursue something he had been wanting to do. So. He goes to Lamar after 1 year, says, I want to go to Kansas. You know, we talked to Coach Self. Coach Self's like, yeah, I got a spot.
I heard that. That's crazy.
And it worked out. So.
That's good. So you actually played with him in?
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not.
Did y'all ever play together in high school? Or
no, me and Kevin did. When my senior year, he was a freshman.
Year. Okay.
Yeah, he was a freshman on varsity. So
so he got pushed up to the varsity
team.
Right, he
did.
But that's the only time that the three
That's
of you
the only
actually...
time. That's the only time. And the crazy thing about it is, like, we never play one-on-one. Or we never, like, I think we're one group of brothers that, like, don't have like a competitive basketball.
Never beat each other.
No, we just haven't. It's strange. So it's,
how tall is Justin?
Justin's 6'8" as well. So like I said, I got gypped, man. I'm telling you.
Now your mom got divorced and then remarried.
No. So my mother and father were never married, but my mother and father were college sweethearts.
Okay.
I guess you could say they were both in college playing basketball. My dad's from the Bronx, from New York.
Okay.
And my mom's from Fort Worth, Texas, and so. They went to University of Texas at Arlington.
Okay, yeah.
Both were there on basketball scholarships.
Oh, so they both play ball too?
I'm sure, pretty sure if you look at my mom's Facebook right now, she probably has the stats from last game.
Your stats?
Yeah.
I was gonna say not her stats.
No, not her stats. I don't know if you scroll far enough,
she might be on there.
Exactly.
So y'all were like pioneers at this North Crowley High School. I mean, y'all y'all ran the show.
We're the first family.
Right.
So like
first family.
We all came through there, and you know, it's traditionally it's not like a basketball rich area, but you know, for some of the things that we were able to accomplish, it's pretty significant, and it got North Crowley on the map.
But Fort Worth is a big town.
It is.
There's got to be some players there. I mean, did you play AAU?
Right. So this is the thing. When I was going into the 10th grade, I was the starting power forward for my high school.
Power
forward. Yeah,
You're trying to be like Carl Hines.
Exactly, yeah. I was Carl Hines before Carl Hines.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So I was a starting power forward, and when my best friend was actually like the best player on the team, and he got invited to an AAU tryout, mm-hmm. and he was like, "Keith, like, I want you to come with me. I don't want to go alone." So I ended up going with him, and I made the team, and he didn't, and you know the rest.
No, you're
happened.
Kidding me.
No, nah, man, that's really how it happened.
And he invited
he wanted me to come with him. Yeah,
just to kind of go along with him.
Yeah, exactly. So it was the weirdest story ever, man. Like,
were you always a scorer from the beginning?
Yeah, I was, but I was kind of like garbage man. You know, like I just, you know, basically, you know, offensive rebounding or get the ball, go coast to coast, kind of like Kyle Hines does sometimes.
Sometimes.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, just all just athletic and just attacking the basket, kind of that kind of thing.
But the jump shot wasn't there.
Was definitely not a shooter, not even close.
Even lefty. I mean, that lefty
yeah,
smooth,
I know.
Man.
It is.
Most
now
lefties
it is.
Now it is.
Now, but back in the day, man, it was pretty rough. It's pretty rough.
So from there you get to KU, to the Jayhawks.
Right.
What other schools, any other big schools?
Yeah,
interested?
So a lot of people don't know this. I originally committed, like this is how fast it went. So like my sophomore year, I try out for this team. Then by the time my junior year of high school comes, like I get invited to Nike All-American Camp. And the first big school that contacted me was University of Mississippi.
Okay.
And I committed right away. Right away as an 11th grader. Ole Miss, I was like, look, it's the SEC. It's not getting any bigger than this.
Is that like the last girl in the bar?
Oh, my God. It was the first girl in the bar. Yeah, that's even worse. That's even worse. So the first girl.
You didn't get time for any more to show up.
Exactly. So, I had the keys. I opened the bar up and took the first one. And so, man, I committed way early and stuck with it for a long time. But then after Nike All-America camp, my ranking as a player nationally went up.
Right.
And some other schools started to show interest. So then in came Kansas, Cincinnati, Arizona, Oklahoma. And I had to open
Arizona's
it back up.
Arizona's a powerhouse back then,
Lute Olson and those guys. Oh, man, it was a great time for Arizona.
And you chose Kansas?
I did.
Because of the history? I mean,
I think that plays a part in it. But Kansas, what ended up happening was Kansas was
– Yeah, the scoring coach.
Oh, man, Roy Williams
is the guy to play for now.
But Kansas was close enough to Texas where I would still be out of state. Okay. Still 6-7 hours driving. And the Big 12 tournament was in Dallas at the American Airlines Arena, right close to home. And you get to play against Baylor, Texas Tech, Texas. So I was going to be coming home a lot to play and family watch me play.
Okay. I never even thought about
that. So it worked out that way.
That's good. But I mean, the history of the place: JoJo White, Danny Manning, Paul Pierce, Collin, right up to Wilt Chamberlain. It's crazy. It's
uncanny, man, to think about some of the people that have come through there. But you know, it's a big part.
The guy
of
who
crazy.
Invented the game, James Naismith, was a coach there. I laugh when I saw he's the only coach in Kansas history with a losing record.
Right, I know. The one guy that invented the game.
Yeah, he should have changed the rules a little bit. So after that, you start to play. I mean, do you get caught up in the mystique when you're putting in on that uniform, like the Wilt Chamberlains, the Paul Pierces? Because there's guys that obviously played before you,
right?
And then there's guys like Joel Embiid and those guys that came after you.
Yeah,
is there a mystique to putting on that uniform?
It is. You know, this is the thing. Like, I think that like the class, kind of like the era, I say the era of college basketball that I was a part of was kind of the last era that really like bought into these types of things. And I think that Coach Williams did an amazing job of like making us understand and like the saying is, pay heed to all who enter the fog. Like we all play with a certain sense of purpose for everybody to ever put on that uniform, and we really genuinely play for each other. So while now, like, you know, I am a scorer, but like that is how I learned the game in the most pure form possible, playing for teammates. Team concept.
That's the same thing those guys at North Crawley are doing right now, and you and Keesner. It's the same deal.
Exactly.
Y'all set the tone, man.
That's really how it works. And so like my pictures and records are still up on the wall and jerseys and stuff. So you have to have, you know, a barometer, you know, for guys to try to look at it, a standard for them.
Tell me about Allen Fieldhouse, man. That place is just first of all, what a home court advantage.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Before I go any further, I'll give a shout-out real quick to the Richmond Spiders, the one team that was able to beat us.
How many games was it in a row? That
like 60-something. Yeah. Man. And the freaking Richmond Spiders came in there and beat us. So, quick shout-out to the Richmond Spiders. But the Allen Fieldhouse is like the closest thing I've seen to it, you know, is, you know, maybe – when I was in Maccabi or Partizan game or even in Oaka, something like
that. I'm going to say Olympiacos better than that. I got a question for that later on, man.
Exactly. But, I mean, as far as in America and American sports and basketball, I mean, it's second to none, man.
And how was it playing for Roy, man? Because, I mean, as a scorer, you can't ask for anything better.
You can't. You know, it, playing for Roy is tough. It scars you a little bit because, you know, he does things in such a certain way that, like, if you go anywhere else and you see some bullshit, like, you know, it kind of makes you want to, you know, call people out on it. Or it, like, kind of makes you go against the grain, which is tough because you know kind of, quote, unquote, how it's supposed to be done. Right. So, like, in playing for Roy, you know, going to 2 Final Fours and playing at his highest level, and then you go somewhere else or play for someone else and you see something different, you're kind of like, hey, man, I know how it's supposed to go. Like this doesn't feel right. So
yeah, but every coach is different.
It is. And one thing as a pro that I've learned, like, you have to be able to adapt to those different styles.
Yeah, but, I mean, but his mind is set up for that up tempo running gun game, the team play, and everything. Right. I mean, hell, you walked in freshman year, got 20 minutes a game, and you know, sophomore year, getting 30 something minutes a game.
That's the thing, like, you know, just that development and being able to go from, you know, a guy that was, you know, 10th, 11th grade, being a power forward on his high school team to being a starter on a back-to-back Final Four team. You know, it says a lot.
You played
to the
more
staff.
Than two guard there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I should, like in the offense, it was like a three guard offense. Right. So like, you know, we all were kind of playing. So yeah.
I got to ask something about Roy's practices from day to day and everything else. I mean, was he just as smooth as he looked like on TV? I mean, his hair was always done perfect. The suit was always right. It was just tight. Everything was tight.
There's actually a very serious intensity to Roy Williams, man. Mm-hmm. Roy used to have Coach Williams used to have these very, like, these bad spouts with vertigo.
Uh-huh.
And like he would go get so mad and start turning red, like he would faint sometimes in practice.
Really?
He would be going so hard. Yeah, like it was scary.
Okay,
but
good. He ain't that smooth then.
No, right. But it just looked so smooth because everybody was terrified, you know, what practice would be like.
Your first 2 years were incredible with him. Like you said, you reached two Final Fours. You lost one in the semis in the Final Four. You lost the other one in the finals. How hard is that, man? I mean,
it's tough. Like it's a lot more tough now than it was at the time, because when you're 18, 19 years old, you think that I'm just always going to be able to get another chance.
Yeah.
I'm going to get another chance. And so now it is, as a, you know, a man that's been playing basketball professionally for 13 years, you're like, man, you know, there's more years behind than ahead. And you're like, damn, like we really had a great opportunity, you know?
That's great insight, man.
Yeah, it is.
Because I think like the games that stick with me in my mind are not the championships I won. It's the damn ones I lost.
Oh man, the ones you lost. Exactly.
Those are the ones that stay with me longer.
I'm telling you, they always do.
People ask me, they're like, what do you remember about after y'all won? Like, I felt empty, like it was all over.
Right, after you lost?
Exactly, I remember being at home for 4 days, 5 days, not wanting to walk outside, you know?
not talking
to anybody.
Exactly. And anything, you can't get it back. Like there's nothing you can do about it. And it's like, I still to this day haven't watched the Syracuse game. Like it'll get like, if it comes on ESPN Classics or like sometimes it might be in the margin on YouTube. Oh yeah, no, not even close. I'm not watching it. I fouled out. No,
I got a 29-year-old son and I've lived in Charleston, South Carolina.
All right.
And so I followed you all through college.
Sweet.
And my son's boy's name is Chase Rathburn, and he's a huge fan of yours and of Kent's. I mean, him and his dad are huge fans.
Okay, Chase, shout out to Chase.
Hold on before you shout out to him.
Right, okay.
He sent me a message before I came in tonight. Yeah. He says, can you ask him why he didn't follow Melo in that last play instead of letting him shoot?
Oh, my God. Chase, you just lost cool points with
that one.
There you go. No, you know, the interesting thing about, like, I don't know if I fouled out in that game towards the end, and the Carmelo Anthony was just too much at that point. Like, you know, just to be honest, I mean, for him, like, he was kind of the first that we saw like that 6'8", moving the way he was moving, shooting the way he was shooting. Like, he was just it was a total mismatch for us. I mean, you know, we all 6'3", 6'4", you know, guys, and here's a guy that outweighs everybody by 20, 30 pounds and is 4 inches taller, so. It was tough, and I mean, and what a lot of people don't really know, Melo did his thing, but Jerry McNamara.
That was my thing.
Jerry McNamara
was what killed y'all.
It's six threes in the first half.
I had it written down as six in the first half. I was like, no way.
Oh, my God.
But he did the same thing 2 years later after that in
40-something.
In the Big East tournament when they ended up in, like, eighth place, and then he went on that run.
Exactly, and they went on a run. Jerry McNamara had a nice run, but for some reason, just didn't translate. I mean, I won't say that doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah, but he got that title.
Exactly. He got it. He has it.
So now, I mean, you're playing 32 minutes a game, 16 points, 5 boards, 2. Right. I got this written down later on, but I'm gonna bring it up right now.
Okay.
Everybody calls you a scorer, 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 but you look at all your stats throughout your career. It's always been 4 or 5 rebounds, 3 or 4 assists per. Right. I'm talking about per game. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think you got an unfair vision. The people have an unfair vision of you because it's like, well, you can score. You do a lot more than just score.
I agree. But I think that, you know, I've learned that the thing that you do the most and well, the thing that sticks out is what people remember.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd rather be known as a scorer anyway.
No, right, exactly. So, you know, it's interesting because even as a professional, like, a lot of times, like, just even you did it as well. You were like, oh, you know, two-time Alfonso Four right. winner, but I've also been first-team all EuroLeague.
Right, exactly.
You know, so it's kind
of that's coming later.
Where,
I know where
okay,
I got
there
it.
You go. All right, okay, there you yeah. go.
Why y'all so impatient, so, man? Y'all hey, let me yeah. get to it.
Hey, man, I'm telling you. You know, athletes, we're sensitive.
I know. Got to get those awards in.
Right. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, like, you want to be appreciated for everything that you bring to the table, right. but you have to own, you know, what you are at your core. So
at this point, Roy Williams gets up and leaves.
Yes, he did.
Man, and you know, as we talked about before with your journeyman history and everything right. else, you always have to adapt to different coaches. But it's adapting to a coach 1 year to another is not the same thing as a college athlete who was recruited by this
it's not.
Who put your faith
exactly.
and your trust in this guy, and you show up, and then he gets up and leaves and goes back to his alma mater.
Totally.
Did you feel like he backstabbed you a little bit? I mean, was it anger? Were you happy for him?
No. I wasn't happy at all.
You weren't happy. Okay,
very,
good,
very angry.
Good.
And I'll give a little inside story with that. Right after Roy left, actually – I'll give the story of when he left. Roy, like, they called the team after we lost to Syracuse. We fly back separate from the coaching staff. And so, like, 1 week goes by.
First time it ever happened.
Mm-hmm. 1 week goes by, and they call a meeting for everybody to meet, like, you know, in the locker room. And, like, we haven't seen Roy, the coaches, or anything. And so my locker is right next to Kirk Heinrich. Mm-hmm. Great teammate, by the way. My locker's right next to Kirk.
Dude.
Oh, great player. Oh, incredible guy. Incredible player. And so right before, like, we're sitting there, everybody's laughing, joking. Like, nobody really even has it on the radar that he's actually going to leave. And so, like.
No rumors, no nothing. No
I mean, one. The rumors are there, but everybody's like, come on, man. Roy, we just came off back-to-back fours. He's not leaving. Like, so.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, but Kirk's, like, eerily quiet. And I'm looking, I'm like, yo, like, Tuss, that's his nickname. I'm like, Tuss, what's up? And he's like, man, I know what's about to happen.
Really?
And I was like, what? And it's so, like, literally like a movie. As soon as I say what, the door opens, Coach Williams walks in, he's got tears in his eyes, and you know, the rest is history. So
and what's the reaction of the team at that point? I mean, you get up, give him a hug, you like, yo, man,
no, man,
you're
like
leaving
he,
us?
He walks out, everybody's stunned. He's literally leaving from there to get on a plane and go to the introductory press conference in North Carolina. We walk out of the locker room, the media, everybody's there, we get ambushed. And
that would have never happened nowadays.
No.
Y'all would have known by Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. There's no social media at that time. So we, you know, and everybody's looking for a hot take or whatever. And so it just, man, it was a tough time. And I actually called Coach Williams before they introduced Coach Self as the new coach. And asked him to transfer, but obviously that didn't work out.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
So you wanted to keep playing for
him. I did.
I
respected
that
Roy
good of a
ton. Yeah. It was it was a great time for me.
That's good to hear, man. I like that. I like to hear that as an ex-player, man, that the coaching meant that much to
he
you.
He did. Man. Oh, man. He was major.
And now you said Bill Self comes in, who's still there today.
Right.
That was
right.
That was in 2003.
That was So 2004. The 03. Oh yeah, the 03-04 season was his first season,
and he's still there today.
Still there. Yeah.
But you also mentioned the fact that you know you got to call BS on coaches when they come in. Bill Self's got a different mentality, different game plan.
I mean, practices with football pads, helmets. Practices.
You're joking, right?
No, I'm dead serious. 3-4 hour practices.
Football pads and helmets.
Football pads and helmets. Oh, this team's too soft. You guys had it too good the last couple of years. We got to get you guys tough.
Oh, man.
Football pads and helmets. I mean, just, you know, so it was a different mentality. Coach Williams is more, let's get the ball out. After the other team scores, let's get the ball out and run. Coach Self is like, no, the ball's not going in. So, like, two totally different mentalities. And so there was a real friction because we had just – no, we were doing it right. Like, in our minds, like,
right,
we just went to two Final Fours. And actually, we beat Coach Self in the Sweet 16 my freshman year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, there was kind of like a, you know, a real fight. You know,
that first year, you still get to the Elite Eight.
Get to the Elite Eight, man.
I mean, and
losing
then,
overtime.
And then, y'all lost that game to
Georgia Tech. Overtime to go to a third straight Final Four. So thinking
I don't know if my boy Chase has anything to say about that game.
Oh,
but
my God. Chase, come on, man.
Give him a break.
You heard me, Chase. Come on, man.
And then you guys are ranked number one right. your senior year
yeah.
with him. And y'all start rolling.
We're rolling. Y'all, 20 and, like, we're 20 and
20
one.
20-1.
We're rolling.
And then it just went down. And I'll never forget the Bucknell game.
Oh, my God. The interesting thing about Bucknell is that, so the two things happened that season. The first thing that happened was we lost the overtime. We were 20-1. We lost the overtime game at Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. And Coach Self, like, ripped into the team crazy. And a couple of guys, including myself, said something back. And, like, that really kind of hurt the morale of the team. So that happened. And then the second thing that happened was I got sick. I had an allergic reaction to my kidneys. And the last month of the season, I didn't play all the way up until Bucknell.
Oh,
and
really?
And so, yeah, okay. I wasn't supposed to play in the Bucknell game. I didn't start. My last college game, I didn't start. I'm sitting there on the side, and the game's not going how everybody
anticipated.
You didn't
know it was going to be your last college
game
at that
time. I had no idea. So Coach Self kind of looks down. He's like, Keith, you might want to go in. This might be it. And I was like, all right, well, let's do it. And, I gave it my best, but right. I hadn't played in a month. So, shout out to Buck. They beat us.
Yeah, it was. I remember that game. Yeah.
I remember it too.
Yeah, I'm sure you remember. I remember it more than I do.
Yeah, of course.
And the knee issues. They started in Kansas.
They started, yeah. So yeah,
you were actually operated on during your time in Kansas?
Yes, three times in a 10-month span. Yeah.
So you never actually rehabbed and came back and hurt it again. There was something went wrong with the operation.
So I had a microfracture surgery at the end of my junior year. Mm-hmm. And then I came back a little too soon. They went back in to clean it up again. And then after that, I had somebody bumped into me in practice and I had a tweak and it aggravated it. And they had to go back in and do one more cleanup. So right. between March, when we got eliminated from the NCAA tournament, between March and, September of the October of the following, I had three knee surgeries.
Wow.
On the right knee.
You went to the NBA camps, I'm assuming, all that other stuff. Yeah, told you that this knee ain't going to make
exactly.
it.
I had a terrible, terrible pre-draft camp. I might have had a 26-inch vertical. It was probably terrible. the sprint times were awful. I was a little overweight. My knee was shot, three surgeries, and, nobody's going to, I'm a 6'3 and a half guard. Nobody's really looking for that, So
you didn't expect to get drafted?
I didn't. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully, I finished as a number six all-time scorer at Kansas. So in my mind, I was kind of like, did I deserve it? I thought so. I played well enough, I thought, during my career. But with the injuries and the first-round loss and some of those things, I kind of saw the writing on the wall.
What was – I love asking Americans this, and you kind of already alluded to it. Yeah. What was that last game like? I always ask, what's the locker room like afterwards? Is your last college game? You got to take that uniform off?
Yeah, yeah.
In your position, you probably think you're going to keep playing somewhere.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You're not 100% sure either.
You're not. I think that last game, it was the one thing I remember looking at the faces of the guys that I knew that weren't going to play anymore.
Right.
And that's what was tough.
And you being one of them.
Yeah, no.
Never played past
college.
Okay.
Yeah, it was over. Because I remember having that same feeling in high school when we lost and, watching the guys that weren't going to play in college. And I was like, man,
what do they do now?
Yeah, it was weird. For me, and when you're young, like I said, you still don't have the perspective to be like, yo, Keith, you're never going to wear this uniform again. It bothers me now. But at the time, it was kind of like, all right, man, what's next? I really didn't like Coach Self anyway, blah, blah, blah. You're thinking that, but that's really not the right way to handle it.
So. Yeah, I was the other way around, man. I was from Little Niagara University. I had no idea if I was going to touch a ball again, man. I didn't want to take that uniform off
You know, I had a high school teammate that played at Niagara.
Really?
J.R. Duffy. I don't know if
okay,
you know.
Okay, yeah.
You know J.R. Duffy?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, I don't know him, but I know that he played there. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. J.R. Yeah. Duffy, we played 2 years together in high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, I didn't know if I was playing again. I don't want to take this uniform off, man.
Really?
And
wow.
I was kind of in the same position. I didn't like my coach that much either. So it's like, I also wanted to just get the hell out of the locker room at the same time.
But I do want to go on record and say me and Coach Self are super cool now.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, that's most of us are cool with our coaches afterwards.
Right,
yeah,
exactly, right?
You know, that's like that's like me and Shelko Obradovich, you know? He coached me for 3 years, man. During I hated him during it. Now he's like my boy.
I can imagine.
Yeah, he's a tough guy, but he's fair. And I mean, I play for him, you know, a million times over.
Yeah, that's
the kind of guy. The crazy thing is, man, I've seen like three surgeries during 4 years, I mean, during a year of college, and 13 years later, you're sitting here talking to my listeners on the crossover, man, and still just killing it.
I know. You know what's crazy? I had two more after that on the same
I know. I mean, you're up to five. I got the count on. You know what?
You did your research, man. Hey, man, I'm impressed. I got to do my research, man. Okay. I'm impressed. All right.
You're not the only one that can impress somebody. Right. I got to start impressing somebody,
there
too.
There you go.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what I say here? People telling you had nothing left. That's what I heard they said. You had nothing left in that. You had maybe 5 years on those knees.
Right. That's what the trainer at the time, because the microfracture surgery, so in 2004, 2005, that surgery was ending people's careers.
Right.
Jamal Mashburn, Darius Miles, Amari Stoudemire had it.
Right, exactly.
You know, so like
that just killed him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Penny Hardaway had it, Chris Webber. So like a lot of these guys, and it was just like there was not enough stuff out there. Like, you know, like the cartilage behind the kneecap is probably the most precious that you have. So it was scary. And so the trainer told me it was like maybe five, Keith. And so, you know,
what trainer was this? The NBA trainer? Or
no. It was a trainer at Kansas.
Okay,
so. And,
someone you had faith in.
Then. Oh, yeah, of course. So I took it to heart. But, you know, obviously he was just telling me the information that he had at the time. So
injuries are obviously a physical disability for athletes.
Right.
But it's also a mental disability for an athlete.
When
someone tells you might have 5 years left,
right,
the first thing you need to think is you're probably not even going to get a job, because who wants someone that's only got 5 years left? Because it might not be five.
Totally. It might not be. Like,
so was there a moment where you, in your mind, you're like, do I move on? Do I put the ball down, hang up the shoes?
There was one moment. There was one time, only one time. And I was, I had played in the D League and didn't have a good season. My first season in the D League, and then after
that was in Fort Worth.
Fort Worth Flyers, right? Sat behind a guy named Ime Udoka, who it was actually a assistant coach for the Spurs now. Played in the NBA for a little bit as well. So sat behind him all season, and at the end of that season, I had no prospects of where to go, where to play, and I was asking my agent, like, I don't have any money. I'm in debt. What am I going to do? And he was like, look, man, I have a job for you in the USBL with the Salina Cagers.
I saw that.
You saw that, yeah, for $4,000. He was like, man, do you want it? And I was like, are you kidding me, man? I have to go back to Kansas where I just played, you know, I'm the number six all-time scorer. Like, I'm the guy in Kansas. I have to go back to Kansas and play for the Salina Cagers in the USBL.
It's a shot of pride.
And so I was like, and I said, there's nothing else? He was like, Keith, like, that's all I got. And so at that point, that's really in my mind. I was like, man, is it over? Like, what am I going to do? And so, and after thinking about it, I was like, all right, let's go. Mm-hmm. And I went to Salina, Kansas, and for a month and a half, lived in the Holiday Inn and played my ass off.
You did get out of there. From there, you went to Italy.
Right. So from there,
and that's, you know, when you get your first European.
Right. European.
And that was. I got the two Italian teams confused. Was that Cremona?
Cremona. Yeah. Cremona was the first
Cremona.
Team. Right. Right.
And I mean, what was it like now, man? Because now you're making money. I think I saw you sign for like 150 or 160.
160.
Like that.
160. That's right.
And now you're making money.
Yeah.
Probably not the kind of money you thought you would be making, but
never.
But also probably not the kind of money you thought you were going to be making when you were young, or when you were like thinking about getting drafted by the NBA. You're
I had no concept that people made that kind of money overseas.
It's crazy, isn't it?
No concept. I was like, are you serious? Like, I remember my college coach telling me, he was like, hey, Keith, look. He was like, you go overseas. And he was like, hey, man, if you go over there and you play 10 years and you make between $50,000 and $100,000 a year, you can come back at the end of 10 years and have, you know, a nice little something to start your life. And I was like, hey, I guess so. You're right. So, you know, like, so you like, people are like ignorant to it, not in a bad way, but they just don't understand. Right. So, and myself included, like, I had no.
The same way. I remember my roommate at Niagara was a kid named Mike McNally, and his brother played and coached in Ireland.
Okay.
And he told me that his brother's making $100,000 a year playing as a player and coach.
Right.
And I did the same exact number. I said $100,000 times 10 seasons. That's $1 million.
Right. Exactly.
I'm like, I can do that.
I can do that. Exactly. Yeah. I can do that. Let's go.
So there is. Yeah. There's kind of like we're blind to actually what's going on in other parts of the world and the money that's out there to be made. But this is your first time in another country.
This is my first time.
Were you one of those Americans that had to go get a passport to go over to Italy and play?
I did. You know, it's funny.
We all were, man.
At the draft combine, and Chad Ford or Chad Scott, I'm not sure. He was an ESPN insider.
Chad Scott.
Okay, that's right. And I read something that he said at the time. He was like, Keith Langford has bad knees. And he's only 6'3". He was like, you better get your passport ready. And so and so I said, you know, and at the time, obviously, like, you know, athletes were sensitive. I took
right,
it.
Right, of course.
But that was the best thing that I could have ever done, man.
Right.
I got that passport, and I took my behind overseas, and I'm still here.
Yeah, exactly. Know? And you've been everywhere over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll talk about the time you messed up and went somewhere else.
But
let's do it. But you played it almost every. I got you down in the D League, the G League. You told me the USBA. You played second division, Italy.
I did.
Your first time was in second division before you went to Virtus, right?
And that was by design, to be honest. Like I had an offer to go to Alba Berlin to come over initially, and my agent was like, "Keith, no, I think you need to go somewhere where they're going to be patient with you, adjusting to living overseas, and you're going to be able to learn the game, and you're going to be able to play." So. We're gonna take this job, and you know, obviously,
it's good advice.
It was, and at that time, I didn't have any concept of, okay, this Berlin or Italy. Okay, cool, fine.
Yeah, it's all foreign.
Yeah, it's all overseas. Yeah. You know, so I'm going overseas. Like I just cared about so, but I'm getting this 160, right? Like
right. That's it's guaranteed.
Exactly,
right?
Like this, I'm getting this. Okay, so I'll go wherever.
I'll go anywhere you tell me.
Yeah,
to go.
Exactly.
That's how it was, too, my first time. Man, I'm like, they sent me over to well, first time I was in Caserta. I was like, I don't care, just pay me.
Caserta, okay, yeah. Okay.
And then I went to Malaga, and my agent called me up, and I swear, I was like, when I'm dumb Americans, man, I was just like, where's Malaga?
Wow.
Like he's like, in Spain. I'm like, he's like, there's palm trees and beaches. I'm like, I'm in.
Like,
and I'm getting paid.
Right.
And I was at the same scale, too. I'm like, I'm getting that 150, right, no matter what.
That's all. Right.
How difficult was it for you to adapt, though? I mean, that's so difficult for us, man.
It was. And it was Cremona's a small town. Mm-hmm. I was playing one game a week. Practicing like crazy. I had Andre Trinchieri was my coach.
Oh, was he? Okay.
He was my first coach. And so can you imagine, like, the guy is how he is now. Like, can you imagine him in 2006, 2007 on a second division Italian team? Oh, my God. We were working, man, like – guy tried to fight me like 3 or 4 times. Like but listen, I love Trinka. Wherever you are right now, Trinka, I love you to death. Thank you.
He's a good guy, man.
He's great.
He's deep, man. He's got everything. I love, like, I've interviewed him a couple times.
Okay.
He just keeps going, man.
He does.
He just keeps going.
He's really one of the biggest reasons I got up to the start that I did, man.
And then you end up in Bologna, which is when you're there, it's not as big as it was back when I played. I mean, Bologna was like a big time.
Yeah, I remember.
They actually had two teams in Bologna.
Is that Fortitudo and
Virtus or Buckler, whatever the name was back then. But it's still a big job because it's first division Italy, and you balled out.
Yeah, and at that time, like, they were just like, it was the last bit of those glory years. Like, everybody was kind of like holding on to, oh, hey, it used to be like this. And trying to understand it. But, man, that time, like, Matteo Bonicioli came in. Actually, Renato Pasquale was the coach the first 4 games of the season. He gets fired.
After four games.
It was like, we had Earl Boykins, and, like, they had invested a lot of money into the team. And so he gets fired. Matteo Bonicioli comes in, and, man, like, for whatever reason, the guy just believed in me. And he was like, look, I'm going to bring you from the bench. But he was like, when you get in there, just play. And just play and just be you. And, man, it took off.
And you won the Euro Challenge with them?
Right. We won MVP, the Euro Challenge, MVP.
MVP of the Final Four.
Yeah. And then
it's off to Kimki.
Yeah, Sergio Scariola came calling.
That's where Serge was.
That's right. He came calling. He did.
And you say, I read, he made you a millionaire.
Sergio put the money in my pockets, man.
Show me the money.
Sergio put the M's in my pockets. So I was, and that was difficult. Because he's a very demanding coach.
Very demanding.
Very demanding, very very meticulous, detail-oriented. And, you know, I think that, you know, we had a good team and everything, but he pushed so hard. I think, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, weren't at the level that he was trying to push. But,
right.
I mean, I learned a lot there and played well, too.
What's the mentality of a kid from Fort Worth, North Crowley High School? All of a sudden you're telling I'm going to Russia to live.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy stuff, man.
You know, it is. You know, like, Russia even looks crazy. Like, if you look at it on a globe, on a map, like, it's like, man, like, I'm going to be here playing basketball. Yeah. Like, seriously? Like, but, I mean, once you get there, I was real fortunate because when I got there, I was able to meet J.R. Holden. And for the
I got him written down later, too.
Oh, goodness, man. And J.R., changed everything for me. Mm-hmm. I started seeing everything totally different, like mm-hmm. my mentality. I wasn't just the typical American anymore.
Right,
once
right.
I met this guy, I was like, oh, this guy's something
been there,
different.
Done it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's a totally different level mentally.
But you know, the a lot of things I preach about with kids is opportunities and finding opportunities, but it's people also, because
right.
you could have found J.R. Holden. But you could have, you know, back then you're a younger player.
Oh.
He was an older guy. You could have ignored him too.
Oh, I could have.
You could have just been like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm making
good.
Money too. Like,
yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, my stats are better than yours. What do you have to tell me? But I mean, there was just something about this guy. When he looked at you, when he talked to you, like, I was like, man, this is before I even knew the history of JR. You know, like, because when I met him, he was on the back end. He was almost finished. But JR. I mean, I could just talk about him the whole time, but you know how I feel. So,
And then you signed for Kim. This is where I get lost a little bit. You signed four more years at Kimki.
Yes, I did.
And you didn't even make it past.
I did not
September.
Make it past training camp.
Yeah,
I didn't make it. So this is really what happened. I signed a 2-year deal.
Right. That was until March. You re-signed the deal, the 4-year deal, March. I read.
Right. Yeah.
2011.
Exactly. Signed. I mean, the money was.
Or July.
Unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, you guys think Shved and Nick Kalathis are making money now. The contract I signed at that time was, it was unbelievable. And Sergio gets fired, which was, it was terrible. But so Remus Curtinitis comes in.
My boy.
And that's your boy. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Don't worry. I got it written down.
All right.
Don't worry.
Okay. All right. I don't want to talk bad about your boy, but.
No. You talk bad about anybody. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So Remus.
Were you injured? I read that they released you because you didn't get back in time from your injury.
Right. No, it's
not
true.
But that's you're only literally only a month and a half into your contract.
Right. So the first game that Remus was the coach, I was somebody got fouled. I'm standing under the basket, and the guy that got fouled fell down. He rolls into the side of my leg. Boom! Pops my MCL. I'm out for the rest of the season. But the team plays well. The team. They go on a win streak. They get to the finals, and they even win game one of the Super League finals at CSKA.
So without you.
Without me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in Europe.
That's a shot to your pride,
It is. It's tough.
I've always said to people, I'm like, I know I want to be a good teammate, and I've always wanted to be a good teammate. But when I'm on the bench hurt. There's a part of you that wants to say, man, I kind of hope they lose today.
Listen. Ask Carson Wentz how he feels that Nick Foles won the Super Bowl him playing. Like,
Come
on, man. You're a competitor. You're human.
Don't tell me you put that ring on with a smile on your face. You know?
You can't. So, once Kempke ended up losing, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, there it is. All right, like, we're back on, like, you know, this is how it's supposed to go. But the thing is, everyone's kind of like, hey, like, you know, we kind of got far without Keith. And me and Remus really weren't seeing eye to eye to begin with anyway. So, the summer goes, I come back, and I'm not healthy. I will say, too, that I didn't do everything I needed to do in the summer.
Right.
But I came back. My knee was still bothering me a little bit. But I was practicing. I was playing. But Remus is a very tough coach. And the schedule, we were going to play in the EuroLeague qualifier, which is, at the time, like, you play, like, a tournament
three days,
and then the champion gets the wild card mm-hmm. spot. And so, I mean, he was pushing, and my knee was bothering me, and I was like, look, I need you, like, can you back off a little bit? He was like, no, keep going. And it all just came to a head one day. We were in the gym in Barcelona in preseason. He's not calling fouls. I'm getting mad. The gym is hot. It's sweaty. It's a tense practice. And then finally, like, you know, I say something smart, And he comes back and says something, and I say something, and he kicks me out of the gym. I go and I get two big Gatorade bottles, and I throw them on the court. And so, like, I'm on the streets of Barcelona walking back to the hotel in my Kimke practice gear. And I get back to the hotel, and it's like, Keith, you've been suspended. You know, and then from there, we had a meeting, and Reeves was like, either he goes or I go. And so from there, we started the whole split.
So that was it.
That was it, yeah.
Man, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's because crazy. If we sit down, I talk to you about I call him Curti. I mean, he was totally different than that as a player.
That's what I've heard, man. Yeah, I've heard from guys like Tyrese Rice that they love him. Like, yeah. He's cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if me and him
must have just been the pressure that got to him or something, man.
I don't know, man.
He was the most laid back, relaxed player. He, you know, he's the guy that gave us, you know, the expressions, three is better than two, man. Three is better than two. He's incredible shooter. But when I read all this stuff, I'm like, man, and I wanted to kind of hear it from you also.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't that type of player. He wasn't that type of just going, right, you know, serious. Right, right. I mean, he can ball. I mean, he can straight up shoot and he can ball. But you never saw that part of him, you know. It's right. But when people coach, it's a different personality.
It is different. And I'll go on record too and say that, like, the guy sitting here talking on this podcast, like, I wasn't that same guy at 26,
right,
27.
Of course.
You know, I knew the contract I signed. I knew, like, you know, I knew who I was at the time. So, like, you know, I didn't play it as professionally as I could have.
So how much of that big contract did you actually walk out with?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing, man. This is the thing about Russia, man. Like, either, you know, you do right or
you do it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You do it right or it's going to be all wrong. So, I walked away with nothing, went to Maccabi, and, you know, David.
You're killing Maccabi. That's my next thing. You went to Maccabi, and,
it didn't start like that, man.
Rough start?
I was... Mentally, I was crushed. You know, I lost all this money.
Right.
Confidence was gone. I was totally just a shell of myself. And so, but the first month in Maccabi, I want to say, I don't even remember making a free throw. Like, I was terrible.
But y'all get to the Panathinaikos, even take a 2-1 lead.
We did.
In the playoff. Somehow or another, y'all blew that. I don't know.
You know, I would say, too, like, you know, we had the chance to, like, because we beat them, and then in game two in Oaka,
right,
go back, win it. And then the game was really close. It was a really close in game four, but, I mean, Dion Matidis, Batiste, those guys, I mean,
they just took over.
Yeah, the Wiley vets. Like, I wouldn't even say they took over statistically, but it was just like a mental edge, you know, a toughness.
A veteran move.
Yeah,
right.
You know, like, it
things
was just
you,
like.
The things that you do to people now.
Yeah, all the stuff that I do now. Yeah, let me grab this.
And I mean, like you said, the beginning wasn't good, but you got your rhythm back. You got your confidence back by the end of the season. You were one of the leaders of the team. How do you not sign back to Maccabi?
Well,
I know it's a tough place. I know they're tough. It's a tough organization to deal with as far as contracts and money.
They're tough negotiators, mm-hmm. and they're tough. And at the time, I'll be honest and I'll say that my whole mentality was: look, I just lost millions.
Right.
Like, I have to do what I have to do to get this back. Right. You know, as close as I could to it. So, in my mind,
in his least amount of years as
possible.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, like, so I was just like, man, I would love to stay, and this is a nice offer. And, man, had it been a different situation, different circumstances, I would love to do it. But,
like, if it was after those 4 years in Kimke.
Yeah, you know, right, totally. Yeah. 100%, totally. Yeah. But
because it's a great place to play.
It is. And during that time period, I mean, you know, with David being the coach there and just the energy behind the team, it was great. But I had a different mission in mind.
So it was off the Milan.
It was off the Milan. Sergio again. Sergio put the money in my pockets again.
Man, you owe that man something.
I do.
Next time I see him, I'm going to have to give him a hug for you.
Nothing bad to say about Sergio Scariola, trust me.
Yeah, you better not. I mean, the first year was rough in Milan. You guys didn't even make it past the regular season,
right? We did.
And then the second year, you guys started picking it up.
Second year, we did. Second year, Coach Bonke came in. Luca Bonke, who's the coach of Ike, Athens right now. And, I mean, he brought that old Siena system in with those guys who won those six championships.
And Montepaschi.
And that system, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Mike James wins the Alfonso Four, because that system produces Alfonso Four winners.
Right.
Bo McCaleb, to
European to Roy Williams,
Bobby Brown, who won under Sienna, and myself.
Right.
And then, you know, now Mike is in it under Simone Pianigiani. Like, Luca was Simone's assistant coach for years at Sienna. So, right. I mean,
it's all connected somehow.
It is. It's all connected. Yeah. So, like, he came in, man, and he put that team together, and we rolled.
Now you're up 12 with 2 minutes to go in game one. Oh, my first question is the easy one. How do y'all blow a 12-point lead in 2 minutes?
Well, I will go on record and say that if we had the Niccolo Melli that's at Fenerbahce now instead of the one that –
He was young then, wasn't he?
He was. He was young then. The one that clotheslined Tyrese
Rice. So you
blaming
it on Melli?
No, no. I would say like, this is how it went. So, like, it starts with Melli because Melli clotheslines Tyrese. Tyrese gets two free throws in the ball, and then Ricky Hickman hits the three. Then myself, I had a chance to put us up one. I missed one free throw, tie the game.
That was my second hard question.
So then, it goes from there, and then after those things happened, Tyrese just took the game over. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at that point, the whole momentum and everything changed.
I mean, it's game one of a 5-game series. That doesn't win or lose the series, but like you said, it changes.
Yeah, it changes the momentum. If you lose it, the way you lose it matters, yeah, though.
Especially
the
at way home, because y'all had
exactly.
Y'all had home.
We
court
had home
advantage.
Court advantage, and everybody, like, we wanted that matchup. Like, I think going into it, like, everybody was like, okay, look, if we get Maccabi, we're good. Like, right. That's the one that we want. So,
let me, and I don't want to bring up a bad situation, but I mean, we all go through it as players, and hopefully, there's a lot of kids listening to this and listening to, you know, your experience.
I hope so.
What's it like being on that free throw line, man, when the game's on the line and you're making money? Because right. that all comes into play, man. When I used to go to the foul line in Portland, I was like, man, I'm getting paid. I got to make this, you know? And
you know, this is the thing. So, like, in those situations, the toughest part, and this is – I don't know how often this happens, but this has happened to me 2 times in my career. The one thing you have to be careful with as an athlete sometimes is overconfidence.
Right.
I went to the line and I made the first one. And I was like, oh, I made the first one. And I don't know if anybody goes to YouTube or they watch it. Like, I make the first one. So confident, so cool. I tucking my jersey in. I'm like, you know, I'm looking around and I'm like, I have this sense of like, oh, we're good.
Right.
Like, all right. Like, don't. But
I lost focus
because I was so overconfident. Like, because the first one is the hardest one.
Right.
If
exactly.
you get the first one, then like the second one is a given. So I make the first one, and then the overconfidence in the second one, and it came off my hand wrong, and I knew it as soon as as soon as it released, and I was like, you know, I won't say what I said, but
we could beep it out. Don't worry, man.
Yeah. So I mean, but you know, and sometimes, you know, you can try and hide behind, well, you know, at least I got the game in the overtime. But No, man, you have to put your team in position to win.
Yeah, especially as a scorer. That's your
yeah,
job.
Exactly. So, like, for me, overconfidence got
right,
the best.
You ready?
Team. I'm ready.
You ready? First team all Euroleague and a Final Four trophy. Not a bad season in 2004. Yeah. Did I give you your just reward now?
Yes.
I made you wait a little bit. You know, I just can't
give
you.
Yeah, I did. I was itching for that.
You know, I'm tough, man. I can't give you things so easily. I go back. Well, I mean, I'll skip over that because I was going to talk to you about your rebounds and your assists. I'm consistent with that because I saw it in Kansas. I saw it in every team you played.
Right.
It hasn't been only scoring.
It hasn't.
I mean,
you've
contributed.
Hasn't, man.
You're one of those guys that – I see you lurk around that little circle area, foul line there, and you get those long rebounds, man. And, you know, that's a big man's best friend right there because there's nothing worse than a big man boxing his guy out. The ball goes up over his head.
Oh, man.
And this guy gets the rebound. And you have the coach yelling at you, box him out. I'm like, I'm like, where's my guard to get the rebound?
But a lot of things is like when you're a scorer, you have to think of these things as like opportunities. Like you get a rebound, that's an opportunity for a transition basket. You know, like
I'm a firm believer you can't score if you don't know how to pass the ball.
That's true.
I mean, you have to be able to find open people to make it easier. You can still score.
Of course.
But you have to make it easier on yourself because if you know you're going to find a big man rolling to the basket or your point guard open for a three on the other side when you penetrate, people aren't going to help anymore.
And that's,
that gives
and,
you
and
one-on-one.
Is, exactly. This is where, like, you know, I talk about JR, and this is one of the things that, you know, he told me. He was like, he said, Keith, like one of the best things he ever told me about my game was let your scoring open up the passing.
Exactly.
Because he was like, you're such a good scorer. He's like, they're going to have to help. And he was like, if you give it up a few times, trust me, everybody knows that you want to score. But he was like, give it up a few times. Like the threat of you scoring is so much. And it's like you said, I'm good for at least two, three, four.
And those open up one-on-one isolation plays.
It does,
because no one could help.
It does.
When you're penetrating. Kasan?
Cause
yes. How'd you get over there?
I was on a money mission, man.
Yeah, that was it. You made it clear from day one.
I was clear from day one. When I lost that, I said, I told my agent, I told my family, I'm going to make this up. And, you know, I had other opportunities, you know, and I didn't take them, but.
And
you know,
this isn't Tel Aviv, Moscow, or Milan.
It is not.
I've never been, but just to travel alone, that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, travel alone is
it's tough. I had to do a lot of things to offset that the travel. I had to do a lot of things, like get my own membership to a spa. Sometimes buy my own business class tickets. Like I did these types of things. Yeah, just to offset certain things that we didn't have.
Mm. And your second season, that was one of your best.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was what I was looking at there, 28 games, 34 minutes a game, 21.7. Again, you won the Alfonso Ford Award, 3.4 rebounds, 3.7 assists, busted 42 in the VTB. Is that your career high, 42?
Yeah, 42.
All time, like high school?
No, not all time. But
what's the all-time career high? What's the most?
Like 52, 54 maybe.
52,
something 54. Like that, yeah.
Right, so
but high school though. High school.
It doesn't matter where you get it, 52.
Okay, there you go.
It doesn't matter
where
you get it. As a matter of fact, high school is more difficult because there's less time to do it.
I know it's less 8 minutes,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. And then from Kasan, I want to jump into China. Is it again a money making mission again?
Well, look, this is what happened. So after 3 years in Kasan, like just like you said, like it is Kasan at the end of the day. So, and after that,
nothing bad about that.
No,
but
no,
it's
nothing
just,
bad. But
it's not
a
easy place
it's,
to
it's
play.
It's a grind.
Yeah.
And I put in 3 years. I put in a lot of work, and I did a lot. And mentally, I was very drained. And I was like, I need something else. And I'll be honest, and I'll say that I got a couple of EuroLeague offers after, and they were all less than what I was making in Kasan.
In
Kasan. And okay. I was a bit taken aback because I thought I had a really good season.
Right.
And I thought that I could still, even though 33 going on 34,
right.
I still thought that I showed that I was in good enough shape and played at a high enough level to where like, and I legitimately had two offers from Panathinaikos and Valencia. I'll go ahead and say it. I won't say how much, but I had two offers. The only two offers I had for EuroLeague, I'll say, and I was like, yo, this is not what's supposed to happen after you have the season that I had this past year. And so,
well, because you were at the height of your career at that point.
I was.
As far as EuroLeague is concerned.
Exactly. And obviously, but this is where one thing, like you said, people have to understand and learn that Europe, it does ultimately come down to winning.
Right.
You know, you have to be either a really bad boy or, you know, your team has to have ultimate success. And my team didn't have the success that it needed to have. So, and China... You know, China came. It was an increase in pay, and shorter season.
Right,
it was something
right.
different, and in my mind, I was like, "Okay, hey, let's try it."
But you didn't like it.
I did not.
You came back quick
from the first day, man.
Really?
Like, it was and the first preseason game, I get hurt. I had knee surgery.
Damn. Okay, that's again. Number 5.
Exactly, number 5. And I mean, it just like for the first day, it was like, you know, you wash your own clothes, you live in a hotel, and they tell you that, oh, look, you're gonna live in this city, and this is. But what they don't tell you is that you live an hour and a half, 2 hours out away from the city, and the hotel and the gym are right next to each other, and you just walk back and forth between the two to do everything. And I was like, listen, I've lived in Moscow, I've lived in Tel Aviv, I've lived in Milan. Like, I need some lifestyle.
Right,
like,
right.
I've been like. And then the basketball, like everybody says, oh, Keith Langford is a scorer. He'll be fine in China. It doesn't really work like that. You know, like there is some organization to what I do. Like I'm not just a guy who goes out there and just.
Right, you need a team with
you. Yeah, you know, like there's a concept. And the way we were playing and the things that we were doing, like it was not a good infrastructure. It was just all around bad. And I was very uncomfortable.
I think you were kind of like me. Where if I played an All-Star game, I couldn't score.
Oh, man, All-Star game, you'd be like, why is that guy out there?
Yeah, because I need people work for me. I need people to do things for me.
Yeah, I have to acclimate, you know, to what's going on. And in China, I just did not have the chance to do that. They were kind of looking at me like, You know, hey, what's going on? Where's the 50 points? And I'm like.
And not, not to bring things home, at 35, I mean, right. You can't feel better about getting an offer from Panathinaikos and coming here and playing in one of the biggest teams in Europe.
Not at all. Like, listen, at 35, like, because this game is, this sport, this game, it's unforgiving. Like, you don't get second chances very often. So for me to turn Panathinaikos down, and then for it to come back around, me to have another chance.
I was surprised when I read that.
You were surprised.
You were surprised way before me. But.
Yeah, when I got the phone call, I was like, you know, I was like, listen, I don't care. Like, don't negotiate any more on the money. I don't care. Like, let's go. Like, let's do it. Like, this is my chance. This is an opportunity. Right. Yeah.
The Derby. You already played one, or you played one or two
we
so far?
We played twice. A year league game, so and a Greek league game. Yeah.
Crazy.
It's
it only gets worse as the season goes on, too.
Right, right. You know, this game, man, it's you have to respect it because it's more than basketball.
Right.
It is more than basketball. The Greek people, they live this, they breathe this, and you have to have a certain respect when you play that game. Like, it's not just a game. Not at all.
I want to finish up and get you out of here with your letter. The letter you wrote to your younger
self.
Wow,
okay.
I read the whole thing about three times today over lunch.
Let's do it, yeah.
When'd you write it?
I wrote that when I was in Kazan, my last
year.
When you're
in Kazan, okay.
My last year in Kazan, yes.
Look, I love the letter because other than the fact that I thought it was incredibly well written, I loved it because you seem mad. You seemed angry. You seemed revengeful. Right. But you also seemed appreciative of everything that's come your way and everybody that's come in the past. So I think it had the different tones. But I've been interviewing a lot of players, and I've loved every player that I've interviewed, and you'll see the list of them. And they're all the nicest guys in the world, man. And it doesn't seem like they have like a bit of like getting mad at somebody or revengeful, and a lot of that letter was just like with Kurti, with Remus.
It was
revengeful. You're like, I scored 34, 32 on him, and fired his ass. Exactly. I was like, yeah, that's the kind of guy I want to talk to.
And the motivation kind of came from like if you ever watch Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, and he takes some shots at people.
Right. Oh yeah.
He lets people know that look. This is how I felt. This is what, you know, I thought. This is what you did. Like, this is what I didn't like. And it was kind of my moment. So,
I loved it. I thought it was, again, it had a touch of everything. And it had a touch of you appreciating. Of course, I got J.R. Holden, you know, written down here now because he just seems like he meant so much to you along the way. Just not only on the court, but off the court also.
Right.
Because, obviously you spend a boatload of money in your first year. Have you made 160? Almost nothing left after your first year.
Right, exactly.
It's tough, man, because you want to help family and friends you get in that situation.
And you have no concept of how money spends.
No.
You know.
And how quickly it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
And when you want to help somebody, people can put you in a position where you feel bad that you're not helping enough. Sometimes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it just keeps piling up.
It does. And so you have to learn how to say no. And thank goodness that my wife is good at saying no because
she didn't say no to you, did she?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah,
she just did the other night too.
We don't want to talk about that, man.
All right, you're right.
It's still PG rated show right here.
Right.
The one part that I liked the most was that it was almost like you came to terms with your, I'm going to use the word embarrassment or the struggle of not making it to the NBA.
Yes.
And I know you didn't use the word embarrassment, but as an ex-player,
perfect word for it. Listen, coming from Kansas and watching, like we talked about some of the pros and the legends earlier, that is what you do at Kansas.
That's what you strive
for. Yeah, you go to the NBA.
You call it insecurity.
It was very, very insecure.
I'm calling it embarrassment.
Right. So, same thing. So, I think once I got over that is when I was able to take off. And I encourage anyone coming overseas. Just be great where you are. And that was another thing that JR told me. Like, doesn't matter if it's second division, doesn't matter if it's D-League, the USBL, be great where you are. You have to let all of that stuff go. Like, at the moment that I let that go, that I stopped calling my agent and was, hey, like, what did they say? Or what's going on? Or do you think I have a chance? Like, the minute that I stopped doing that, and he started calling me and saying, hey, you all right over there? Like, nah, man, I'm here. And I'm worried about this.
That's how it is sometimes with girls, man. When you start chasing a girl down, they run away from you, or vice versa. When they start chasing you, you're like, man, leave me alone for a little bit.
It is, right?
But all of a sudden, you're like, man, why ain't that girl sent me a text message lately?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
so it's interesting how it works out. But when you let things go sometimes, things come. Same thing in the game, man. You can't go out and chase a game.
You can't.
You can't go out and chase points. You got to let them points come to you.
Listen, every time that I've gone into a game and said that I want to score or I need to score, I have a dud.
It is.
You just have to just be natural, man. Do the right thing for the right reasons.
Who's JR's boy Darius? Because I got a feeling from what I understand, he's some kind of physical therapist or some kind of workout guru or whatever. I need to call this guy.
Yes,
I'm fighting this Christmas thing right now, man.
You can get out there and grab a couple rebounds for us tomorrow if you don't mind.
I'm gonna shoot, bro. Put me in the corner, let me shoot. I'm taking your job.
I know, that's right. All right, okay, good.
But what has he meant to you in your career?
So Darius, and he would hate that, you know, I'm even talking about him because he wants to remain in secret, but it's J.R. Holder's brother.
Okay.
And so the one thing that JR privy me to was that during his career, Darius has been there every step of the way, from giving him advice on the game to stuff to read to, I mean, just life,
mental.
Everything. Like, and this guy, he has, like, in some of my worst moments, my most down moments, he has kept me together.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there. He's in Athens right now. Like, he's with me every step of the way. He was there in China. He's been there for the research. Like, this guy is, like, you know, when it's all said and done.
What's your wife think about that?
You know, in the beginning, it was like, hey, you and Darius, you're a little too friendly.
Are we missing a ring here or what?
Exactly. But, you know, eventually she's come to appreciate, because this is the thing with Darius first came into play, because me and JR are real close. And remember I told you that I went to Maccabi and I was terrible that first month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I called JR and I called Darius and I was like, look, man, I need him. Like whatever you guys were doing and whatever was going on, I need him here.
So you reached out.
I reached out.
Yeah.
And I said, I need that. And at that time, my wife, she was just like, Keith, do whatever you need to do.
Right.
And so he was on the first thing.
She said, I'm going to take the day. I'm going to take the week off, man. Let Darius come out and do his job.
I'm tired of taking the brunt of all of this.
Because they do, man.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
They do. And, you know, and I wrote that in the letter as well, you know, like, you know, about her.
I'm going to ask you that in a minute. My first podcast, the first one I did that was published was David Blatt. You mentioned him earlier.
Right.
And before I interviewed him, I sat down and watched his practice, man, And if there's ever a miracle that can happen and someone could put something in my body to make me go out and play for one more season, that's the kind of guy I want to play
for him, right?
I was just amazed at the way he handled his team, the way he criticized, the way he talked to people, the way he never talked down to anybody.
Yes.
And it's just the way of, like, it's a way of not getting in your face and yelling, but a way of making you kind of like rethink, like, wow, man, he's right. Why did I just do that play?
Right, no, totally. He like, this is the thing I say about Coach Black. He is a master teacher, psychologist kind of thing. Like, he knows what buttons from every guy, how to push and pull, just like you said, man. And he's done that time and time again.
It's amazing, man. I just love watching. How long you been married to Brittany?
7 years. It'll be 8 in August.
It'll be 8 in August.
Yeah,
two kids.
Boy and a girl. Casey and Kate.
You done now, boy and girl?
I'm going to try for one more. She's done.
But wait, that ain't working now.
Yeah.
I know. You do what I did. I adopted a third.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know, we actually talked about that.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you about that later.
Yeah, we'll ask about that later. It's not a bad way to do it. But, I mean, it's amazing. It really is what you said earlier. What I said is the amount of time and that they sacrifice as far as being with kids. We're traveling.
Man.
You're on the road. You're hurt. I mean, we are not easy people to be around when we're hurt.
We're not.
I wouldn't want to be around you.
No, totally. Like you said, man, like, you talk about a guy who's, I've had a couple of knee surgeries.
Right.
I've been cut.
Yeah. You've been through it all.
I've been through it all. So, like, but it's not against them, but they're just there.
Right.
You know, and so, but and she's been
the brunt of it.
Yeah. And so she's just been, she's been amazing.
And you know, I love to preach about legacies and what we leave behind. And I think that's the most important thing that you have what's the legacy you want to leave professionally, and what's the legacy you want to leave, like, as a dad?
So, okay, well, professionally, you know, I'll just say that, man, like, you know, I think one thing that people will say about Keith Langford is that the people that played against me and the people that played with me was that, like, I was not what they thought I was from the outside looking in. Like, this guy, he worked his ass off. He was a consummate professional, and, like, he gave it everything he had. And he was all right with the results, like, you know, regardless, because he did his best. And so, like, I think that any teammate that I've had, any coach, they will second that. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm all right with that, and that's fine. And as a dad, I just, you know, the thing is, you want to be a little bit better than, you know, maybe your parents were.
Right.
Like, now, that's whether that's providing you know, financial security, or whether that's, you know, whatever it may be, you know, being there, being in the house. And so, like, my son, like, the one thing that I want to provide him with is that, like, there's no pressure to be an athlete, or there's no pressure to be anything. Like, he really has the freedom to be whatever he needs to be. Same thing for my daughter. Like,
of course,
whatever she genuinely takes an interest in, whatever he genuinely takes an interest in, your dad has worked his ass off to the point to where you can do that, and you can go and discover that and explore that.
Yeah, because you can support him financially and emotionally.
Exactly. And so, like, everything is in place. Like, you have no pressure to do something you don't want to do because, you know, the family needs you or something like that. And I feel like that's the best thing as a dad that I can provide.
I like that. Wait, I can't put a number on it, but how much longer do you think you could deal with the practices, the training camps, the travel, the coaches?
That's what's going to get me, is the training camp.
Where's it going to be?
Training camp, Chavi heard me this year.
You're going to let them know that,
he
right?
He heard me, I'm letting you know. So, like, but, you know, as far as playing, like, I'm probably not going to dunk on anybody, but, like, as far as moving, like, I still feel okay. The toughest thing is recovery now. Right. I mean, I'm sure you know that as well.
Yeah,
like,
but I'm still going through it.
Yeah.
20 years later, I'm still trying to recover.
You know, yeah, the recovery is the toughest part. But as far as playing the game, like, you know, as long as, you know, I still feel, you know, mentally sharp, like, and my body continues to do what my mind tells it to do, then I'll keep playing. But the moment that I, like, my mind's like, okay, in and out, left cross, step back, and then my body does something else, I'm done.
That's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah, unfortunately, it's going to happen.
It does, right? So,
I just hope it happens later than sooner.
But I'm going to embrace it, so it's okay.
And then what's your plan afterwards? Because that's one of my main things with players.
So my plan afterwards, hopefully I'll be able to pull this off. I've already talked to some guys. My plan is to, you know, the NBA has a RTP program, Rookie Transition Program.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is to, I want to put in place something for Europe.
Okay.
Guys coming to Europe for the first time, whether that's coming from college or whether you've been in the NBA and now you're coming overseas for the first
time.
Kind of
what they expect, what
you're going through, this and that. And so, obviously, Rookie Transition, they're able to send rookies to New York and all meet for one time. But my plan is to – the one place where guys are is Las Vegas, Summer League.
Right.
So, during that time, so guys kind of have an idea – where they're going to be and what's going on.
So you want to be a J.R. Holden to all these guys.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to bottle that up.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to put it in, you know,
nice.
Into a little
I like
kind
the fact
thing.
Just that you got a plan. That's the most
important
thing.
So that's,
I walked
that's
out without a plan, man. It's not a good move.
Did you? Hey, I've heard too many of those stories, so that's why I went ahead.
You always
so
need a plan,
I have
man.
A direction, so we'll see. We'll
jump right into it, too. Don't take a year off. Don't do nothing. Jump right into it.
Okay.
Dive in like a pool, man, like a warm
pool.
Right on. Hey, man, I appreciate you spending the time with my listeners from the Crossover, man. I mean, you got to get some rest. You got a double week coming up.
Excuse me, because I had a little cold. So
that's
I
okay. We'll edit that out.
Just like
that F-bomb you dropped later on. We're going to edit that out, too. Keith, man, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.